On today's show, we'll be joined by weekly co-host Ben Dubose for a quarter season Houston Rockets report card as we navigate through the Houston Rockets roster and grade players A's, B's, C's, D's, and maybe even some F's on how they produced so far through the quarter season mark of this Houston Rockets season. Who's done the most with their minutes on the floor? Who's made an impact? Who has carved out a role for themselves on this Rockets roster? All of that and more coming up right here at Locked On Rockets.
This is Mission Control, Houston.
Ignition sequence start.
The Houston Rockets select Jalen Green and Jabari Smith Jr.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
Every time I step on that floor, I'm coming.
You're getting somebody who's going to come in with a chip on their shoulder, somebody who's going to come in and compete from day one.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's up and welcome to another edition of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and credentialed media member. I'm also the host of Locked On NBA Mondays, host of the State of the Rockets podcast, as well as Rockets Watch. Be sure to follow along on Twitter at JT Gatlin and the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, free and available wherever you get your podcasts, including YouTube, where you can help out the show tremendously by commenting anything below. But for today's episode, you can actually go grade the Rockets roster alongside myself and your co-host Ben Dubose. I will paste the template for the order in which we do our player grades on today's episode. Go through, give us your player grades for the Houston Rockets players through this quarter mark of the NBA season. It's going to be a ton of fun. We'll be able to cross-reference our grades. You can tell us whether we're completely on the money or completely off base. Now, today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code Locked On. That's PrizePicks.com. Promo code Locked On. Joining us now is your weekly co-host, none other than the podfather himself, Rockets Wire editor Ben Dubose. You can follow on Twitter at Ben Dubose. Ben, we are now right about quarter of the way through this. I hate it because the NBA season, it's you don't get an exact quarter point, right? Right. There's not a way to break up 82 into quarters. I'm bad at math, so I don't know if there's... Right, there's not a way to do that?
No, but 20 out of 80 is close enough.
Okay,
and we're at 19 now.
There you go. Right. So we're basically at the quarter season mark, which means we've had a lot of discussion about some of the ups and the downs of this roster. So this is as good a time as any to maybe we're going to hand out some quarter season grades, some quarter season evaluations of the guys on this Houston Rockets roster. And where else can we start? But right at the top for this Houston Rockets team, Jalen Green. And so the way we're going to do this is we'll kind of navigate. We'll do letter grades back and forth, and we'll do an average between our two letter grades. So when you give Jalen Green an F and I give Jalen Green an A, it'll balance out and it'll be, come out to a wash with a C. Sound good?
Yep. Let's do it.
All right. Well, starting with Jalen, I mean, I feel like apart from that one little gap that he had where he was really struggling to shoot the ball, kind of went into that shooting slump.
That four game West Coast road trip.
Exactly. Right. Pretty much from that point, like before that point and then immediately thereafter, I feel like he's been phenomenal. And then we've discussed like his growth as a playmaker. We just saw him have a career high 9 assists against the OKC Thunder, a really fantastic performance. I feel like it's not super like homerism or whatever to just grade Jalen an A for the season. Yep. Honestly, I won't go A plus all the way. We'll do pluses and minuses. I won't go all the way, but a flat A seems fair.
Yeah, I'm doing a flat A too. Sorry to be boring and take the same one, but the only reason I'm not giving an A plus is because some of the on off, the more advanced metrics still don't love him in terms of, you know, his on-court production relative to when he's off. But I think a lot of that has to do with the units that he's found. And that starting lineup is the one that's especially, I would say, projection oriented. And there's some factors beyond just short-term basketball. What's best for the current team, because Jabari Smith, he's played better over the past week, but the first month he really struggled, yet they're going to start him anyway because he's, you know, the number three overall draft pick, even if he's 19 years old and he's not quite ready. And he also had the ankle injury. I think Eric Gordon is clearly starting over KJ Martin for somewhat political reasons. I would say KJ is outplayed into this point in the season, but for various reasons, it's tough to pull Eric out of the starting lineup. We've talked about that before. Even though Alperen Şengün has, you know, really strong top line numbers, he's not a good defender. And I think putting Şengün's defense with all these younger guys, excluding Eric Gordon, is a really tough fit. And so I think that's why some of the on-off numbers are not, you know, hugely supportive of Jalen. I think that's just out of his control because the Rockets are trying to do other things besides win basketball games in the short term when they put these these starting lineups and these rotations together. Clearly, it's a balance between trying to win, but also development and other factors. And, you know, Eric Gordon, I think his veteran status plays into it as well. But yeah, when we talk about Jalen, look, his overall numbers, 22-4-4. His true shooting percentage is almost at 56 now. He's getting more free throws. It was 3.5 per game last year. Now he's more than 5. He's advanced in really every area of his game. He's approaching top 20 in the entire league in scoring. And that's why I do use the top line numbers. I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of people that talk about advanced metrics these days. But look, for Jalen to do what he's doing, averaging nearly 22 points per game and being top 20 in the league in scoring on a Rockets team where he's clearly the focal point for opposing defenses. When opposing coaches try and draw up strategies, when they're talking about how they're going to limit the Rockets, Jalen is the focal point. So for him to put up these numbers while really having very little in the way of support, doing this at 20 years old, when he's still not nearly fully developed physically, I don't see how you can look at that in year two at 20 years old and not say that that's potentially a very special player. And to this point, an A, I would give him an A plus, except, you know, I'll give that small bit of deference to the on-off differentials.
And, you know, I struggle. I really dislike the idea of using on-off differentials or even like plus minus stats, whatever, for, right, you know, to evaluate an individual, especially an individual on a bad team, right? A team that the, yep, expectation is, yeah, you're going to play poorly, right? And I feel like that's just, there's so many different NBA metrics to use, and anybody trying to use, you know, those two specifically, plus minus or on-off, to maybe like, you know, counter the argument that Jalen Green's had a really productive year, I just don't want to, I wouldn't stand for it at this point. I do think, right, you're looking at Jalen Green, he looks like, if the playmaking holds, right, which I thought he was going to be a playmaker, you know, I thought he was going to start to develop the playmaking maybe 3-4 years from now, that kind of thing. Like, yeah, we'd seen flashes of it. I kind of envisioned, okay, maybe down the line, it's something he adds to his bag more routinely. We're seeing him develop as a playmaker in year two. And that's really scary, yeah, to think about him packaging the scoring with the playmaking. So yeah, I'm right there with you.
And by the way,
across the board,
by the way, I was drilling down into the numbers, and we talked about that 4-game road trip, which was games 5 through 8 of the season that he struggled. Since then, he's averaging 24 points and 5 assists per game, which we're going to be doing that in year two. And it's on strong efficiency as well, shooting like 49% from the field, 38% on threes. For him to be passing at that rate this early, I agree with you, it's staggering. And by the way, that's an 11-game sample. It's been 11 games since that 4-game road trip where he really struggled. So that's more than half of this quarter sample we're talking about. More than half, he's been at, you know, nearly 24-5 per game, which again, at 20 years old, year two is just phenomenal production. And some of the more team-oriented stats, I think you have to give deference, as you were saying, to just the fact that this is not a team that's trying to win, and it's not a very good roster, period. And so it's unfair to really judge him on those.
Yeah, and if you look at the going by that, I may have missed a game here. I think, no, 10-game sample size after that West Coast swing. I mean, he is shooting, his true shooting percentage jumps up to 63%. So, right, like that, right, apart from that little, yep, dip on the West Coast swing, he's been fantastic this season. Let's shift gears to his backcourt partner here, mm-hmm, in Kevin Porter Jr., because this is going to be probably the controversial one. I went first with Jalen, unfairly so. I should have given you, I should have given you the chance to go first. So I'll, mm-hmm, let you go first with your grade for KPJ through this point of the season.
So I suspect that a lot of people on Rockets Twitter are not going to like this, but I'm going to go B minus. I just think that a lot of the criticism of KPJ comes down to square peg in a round hole. And I don't see him as the point guard long-term for when this team is trying to really win, be it a year or 2 years from now. But I think some of this is that there's just not really another option on this particular team. And if you try and mention Dacian Nix, you know, you're not even serious. That's not a realistic option for high leverage minutes in the NBA, and Dacian's in year two as well. So I think KPJ as a point guard would deserve worse than a B minus, but that's not the only way that I'm grading him. For me, this Rockets season is about seeing where guys can fit long term. And while I'm questionable about KPJ as the point guard, you can look and see, you know, guys averaging basically 19.6 rebounds, 6 assists per game. The height is there for him to be able to guard multiple positions. The catch and shoot numbers are still there. I don't know that he's ever going to be the playmaker or have the vision to be a starting point guard on a playoff team, one that's really trying to win. But there's enough raw production there that, to me, especially now that we know the contract and it's fairly team friendly, I'm going B minus simply because I think there is a viable NBA rotation player in there. His role is to be determined, and I'm really not sweating that much as far as, well, is he a point guard or is he not? Just because I don't really see what really the alternative is at this point in time. So that's why I'm giving him not a total pass. That's part of why it's a B minus, but you know, I'm a little friendlier just because I'm not really that worried about. And for the record, I don't think, you know, we've said this, we've had this conversation before, but I really don't see what some other people see in terms of the Rockets being too invested in KPJ. I don't see it. To me, the proof is in the contract. That's a very team-friendly deal because they don't trust him that much. There clearly are questions both on and off the court. I think that's why they negotiated a very team-friendly deal with a ton of team control. And so I'm just judging KPJ through, can you find a rotation player in there? And are there some warts? Certainly. But I've seen enough, especially with the catch-and-shoot numbers holding steady from a year ago at a very high rate, near 50% on threes. Then, yeah, I'm going to give him a B-.
I'm not too far off from you. I'm a little bit lower on it. I go C plus for okay. KPJ, so we can average that out. I mean, close enough. Just one tier, one notch below. You know, for Kevin Porter Jr., I agree with a lot of the points you brought up. I've been kind of banging the drum of the square peg round hole kind of argument, right? He's playing out of position at the point guard spot. When you start to look at him through the lens of a secondary creator, a 2-3 type player, then you can evaluate him a little bit differently. We've had a lot of discussions over on Rockets Watch about that very topic. At the same time, though, I think there's just a level of, like, when Jalen has it going, when LP has a strong night, whatever, there's just like this, I feel like there's a moments that Kevin Porter Jr. has where he's like, okay, well, now it's my turn, right? Now it's my turn to get mine. And yeah. I don't know whether that's like a KPJ thing or if that's a coaching staff thing, like encouraging him, hey, you're our guy. You're our, you know, you're right there on the same level as Jalen Green. Go get your buckets kind of thing. And so unfortunately, we're not really ever going to know concrete like what the answer is to that question. But that's kind of where I draw a bit more of the line, because if you're going to really be the point guard, which he's embraced the role, right? And there's games that he's had where he's looked really phenomenal doing it. The identity of being the point guard, right, is you've got to get other guys the ball, right? You've got to get other guys involved. And the one knock that I've had consistently on KPJ's game this season is too often he tunnel visions and focuses on his own ability to get buckets. And sometimes that works. When he makes the shots, when he has those big 20-plus point nights, 30-point performances, it's awesome. But then there's a lot of times when he gets into a bad groove or starts missing some shots and kind of mucks up the offense a little bit. Yeah. And then that's when things get sticky on the floor. So I'll give him a C+. Not the end of the world. I think there's a lot of room for improvement. And I think we've seen some really high points for him. And that's also what is frustrating, because you're like, man, you see the highs. And you're like, if he could just be like 80% of this consistently, then you'd be ecstatic about his, you know, prospects as the long-term point guard. But we've got to get to, we went to the backcourt first. We'll get to the front court, pseudo front court with Eric Gordon, I guess. We'll get to the front court here in just a moment, but today's episode is brought to you by Turo. Turo is the world's largest car sharing marketplace. With Turo, you can book any car you want, wherever you want it, from a community of local hosts. Browse a huge selection of vehicles for just about any occasion or budget across the US, UK, Canada, and Australia. Book a spacious SUV or minivan for a family road trip. Get a classic or luxury car for a special event, birthday, or holiday. Find an affordable economy car if you're just on a budget and need to get from point A to point B. You can even test drive a new electric vehicle that you've had your eye on and kind of see how it fits your everyday life. Lifestyle, right? Many Turo hosts can even deliver the car right to your doorstep. Every trip is backed by liability insurance. Terms, conditions, and exclusions do apply. Forget boring rental cars. Find your drive at Turo.com. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, appreciate you for making LOR your first listen each and every day. For your second listen, go check out Locked On Sports Today. From the games that matter the most, the biggest stories in sports, go beyond the scoreboard and behind the scenes with the local experts and insights only Locked On can provide. Locked On Sports Today, available on this app, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, Ben, let's shift gears here to the front court, if you will. And we'll go pseudo front court because I feel like this one is maybe, it feels like Eric Gordon feels like he has tenure at this point. So it's like, do we even grade him, right? He's just like that tenured professor that can kind of do whatever the hell he wants and he's going to get off scot-free. Yeah. In fact, you know what? Can I executive decision this? Do we just not give Eric Gordon a grade because he's got tenure? Like, I feel like that's kind of fun. Let's do that. You know what? Never mind. Eric Gordon doesn't get a grade. We're just like, EG's got tenure. We love him. He's had a fantastic Rockets career, but it's time to move on.
Yeah.
He's, There we go. We're grading him on his accolades. No, all right. So, EG, get out of here. All right. So, let's go to Jabari Smith Jr. And we're just moving down the line of the starting lineup, the current starting lineup, unfortunately. But Jabari, and you mentioned earlier, right, talking about the on-off splits with Jalen, but Jabari had a rough start to his year. And I think, for me, I think a big part of that we maybe didn't give enough credit to was the ankle injury.
Yeah, I think that was...
maybe something that, you know, either just that lingering, like, physical ailment, right? Not being quite 100%, like 85, maybe 90% to where he's not fully trusting his body. And then, you know, potentially some of the mental side effects of that, of being a little bit maybe cautious at times in how he's moving or how he's trying to explode on the court. Because now, like, he looks night and day different over this last, you know, week or so compared to the early part of the season where I was kind of worried, Ben, about some of his, like, his jumping ability, his burst when he was trying to, like, secure rebounds and stuff.
Yes.
And now you see him, like, towering over guys, skying for rebounds, and it's completely different. So, and he mentioned it the other day after the Hawks game that he feels like he's finally got his legs under him, right? So I think you still have to take into account the slow start to the season. I'm going to give Jabari I'll go B minus.
Okay. I'm going to be slightly rosier again because with the rebounding surge, really the only thing that's lagging is his shooting. And let's be honest, Jabari Smith Jr. can shoot. There's enough for a track record. That's the one thing that I'm not that concerned about. So again, when I do grades, it's sort of a combination of, you know, you're looking at the raw numbers, but it's also adjusting for realistic expectations. You know, like with Jalen, would he get an A, which we both gave him, if he was 25 years old and he was near his peak? I don't know. He would definitely still get a positive grade, but I think part of it is that he's doing all these things at year two and in 20 years old when he has so much further room to grow. So I think for Jabari, the fact that the shooting is the element that's really lagging, to me, that makes me a little more bullish because the rest of it, look, the rebounding surge that he's gone on lately, and he's been a big part of, you know, these last two games against the Thunder and the Hawks, how they've just dominated on the glass. And a big part of it is Jabari going out there and getting double digit boards, and especially early in games, just towering over guys, as you said. And it's just night and day compared to, you know, I think the low point was when he played in Orlando, that game against Paolo. And that was when he's coming off the ankle injury and he had like 3 points and I think one rebound in 22 minutes. And it looked like he just was not even comfortable on the floor. Whereas now, regardless of whether the shots are going or not, and he is taking more shots, you can see the confidence is growing there as well. But just the fact that he's so comfortable throwing his body around and leaping for those rebounds, that tells me that early in the season, he was just not there 100%. Because that's something that, you know, sure, you get a little more physically comfortable the more you play against these guys. But I don't think, you know, his body has radically transformed in a month. I think the more likely scenario is that he's much healthier. He's much springier now. He's not worried about that ankle as much. And so he's able to make a difference already with defense and rebounding, even at 19 years old. So when you look at those factors and then the shooting percentages, of course, they aren't where we would like them to be. But again, I'm just giving some deference to the scouting reports and the fact that, you know, that's one element of his game that is going to come around. And I don't know if he's going to turn into a star, but if you can turn, you know, if you just have that level of defense, rebounding, and the shooting comes around, at a bare minimum, you're going to have a very, very high level 3-and-D type player. And so for me, the start that he's on, and now that we're seeing other elements of his game really come around, I'm pretty pleased. I'm giving him a B.
No, absolutely. And I think even though, right, the shots haven't been falling, I think we've seen like this curve where it's trending back up in a positive way of just the confidence in the shots that he's taking. And I'll do this very, very quickly before we move on to the big Turk himself, Alperen Şengün. But look at like his 3-point attempts, right? Opening night game, 11 3-point attempts. Then he has 8, then he has 7, and he's not hitting them at like his regular clips. So then he dips down 5, 6, 5, 6, 5, 6, like, you know, bunch of 5s and 6s. Mm-hmm. Then he goes down 3 attempts, 5 attempts, 4 attempts, like gets really down where he's like not even attempting the threes. And then he has one game where he attempts 8, but then he's still 2 attempts, 4 attempts, 5 attempts. And over these last 4 games, he's back up to 8 attempts, then 9 attempts, then 11 attempts, then 8 attempts in this most recent game against OKC. The confidence with which he's now pulling the trigger on the 3-ball is back to where it needs to be. And he's still not converting them at the, you know, the perfect rate, but the confidence is there. And that's what matters. Yeah.
And by the way, over his last three games, I know that's a small subsample of what we're doing of these first 19, but he's shooting 45% overall, above 39% from three and 90% from the free throw line. So that's a small sample, but in this three game stretch where they won two of them, and really they should have won all three, if not for Steph and Clay shooting out of their minds in that Golden State Sunday game. Yeah, Jabari's shooting does seem to be coming around as well. And so when you see the recent trend matching the scouting report, that's part of why I'm pretty optimistic on him.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself. As one of the residents of the Jabari jungle, if you will, feeling a little bit of vindication here for the people that were labeling him a bust earlier this season. He's trending upward, and that's what matters. Let's talk about Alperen Şengün, because Şengün is in such like a precarious position this season, right? With the whole, yep. Is he going to start? Is he not going to start? You know, is he coming off the bench? How the team has utilized him, all that. Like, aside from like Kevin Porter Jr. is like, you know, public enemy number one on Rockets Twitter, as far as just the discourse and everything that, you know, the discussions around him. Is he a point guard? Is he not? Whatever. The center position is like right there. Like it's 1A, 1B as far as just contention amongst Rockets fans and what Şengün can be or what he should be for this team, how the team is utilizing him, what Steven Silas is doing with him, all of that. I'll let you take this one first. How would you grade Şengün through this quarter mark of the season?
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to be disappointed in me when I say this. I'm going to go B minus, even though the top line statistics, I know I'm looking at them. I mean, they are so freaking sexy. Like 15.2 points, 9.1 rebounds. He's shooting nearly 55% from the field in 27 minutes per game. I mean, he's just remarkably efficient. We know the big night he had against the Thunder on Saturday night. And of course, Thunder didn't have any sort of realistic big, so you would expect him to eat, and he did. His player efficiency rating is near 22, true shooting percentage, 61.5. So all the metrics love Şengün, or at least the offensively tilted metrics. But I do give some deference to whether you want to say it's Steven Silas, Raphael Stone. There's a reason why the Rockets don't trust him on the defensive end of the court. And you can argue that maybe the team should have a longer leash with him to try and let him learn. But this is one in which, you know, I'm not saying that you can't criticize Silas or Stone, but what I am saying, we've seen so many times, you know, to start the year, there's a reason why in training camp, it went from Şengün being the projected starter, the way things were going into camp, to Bruno Fernando. And lately we've seen that even though Şengün has started because Bruno has been out, Usman Garuba has actually closed a number of games, especially the last couple of weeks, as Usman's play has improved and the Rockets have gotten more competitive as a team. And of course, it comes back to defense. And the good news is that, you know, Alperen, he recognizes that. You had a great clip that you posted to your Twitter after Saturday's game in which Alp was asked about the combination of him and Bruno. And he mentioned that, you know, he, meaning Alp, is better offensively and Bruno's better defensively. And I think that's a really good sign, because what you want is a guy who's self-aware of his own weaknesses. What you don't want, someone who says, well, my numbers are really good, and so that just means I'm a good player simply because, you know, I'm putting up on a per 36 basis something close to 20-12. This is, you know, some semblance of awareness of his flaws. And I think that's a good sign, but he is in year two. And, you know, it's hard to say, you know, how much of this is correctable and how much of that, you know, he's not super athletic. He's not much in the way of traditional rim protection, but I do think that it's clear that he's not on the defensive end where the Rockets would like him to be. And it's fair to question if the Rockets should say, you know what, screw it, he's so talented offensively, we should just deal with these flaws and, you know, just put him out there anyway, sink or swim. Okay, that's a viable argument. What I don't think is a viable argument is saying that, you know, Steven Silas and Raphael Stone don't know what they're talking about. No, I think it's pretty clear that there's a trust issue with Şengün on the defensive end, and they are hesitant to leave him out there for extended stretches. They clearly think that there are certain matchups that are advantageous to his skill set. So again, I'm not really down on him, because overall the top line numbers are what they are. They're fantastic. And offensively, he's a real difference maker. But I just think that he still has a ways to go on the defensive end. And some of it's obvious. Some of it is based on stuff we haven't seen. You know, again, the training camp factor, the practices, all those types of things. But I would just say that while he's had a good season, clearly there's still a lot of growth for him to do on the defensive side. And I think, you know, like with Jalen, we've seen a jump from year one to year two. I think Jalen's holding up physically much better at the point of attack on the defensive end. We didn't even talk about that earlier. Whereas Alpi, maybe there's a little bit of growth, but I don't think he's come along the same way on the defensive end. So that's why I'm, you know, not down on him. I just think he's capable of more than what he's given you so far.
I think I'll go, I'm so torn on this because I feel like the discussion about Alpi's defense is, it's frustrating because Alpi does have his limitations defensively, but so much of it is a byproduct of the fact that the Rockets as a team are just a bad defensive team, right? Their point of attack defense is almost non-existent. They don't pressure the ball on the perimeter. You know, there's at times there's like Olay defense being played. And I think a lot of that puts the onus on like the backline defense, right? Şengün or Fernando or Usman to clean things up for the perimeter defenders. And that's an unfair expectation to them. Now for Uzi and for Bruno, it's like, okay, well, they're a bit more adept defensively, so they can kind of clean up some of those mistakes and account for the limitations of the perimeter defenders and make up for those things. Şengün sometimes can. He's got good anticipation. You know, he reads the floor well, but he doesn't have the same physical gifts that those guys do.
And by the way, I'll sneak in a grade for Eric Gordon. I know we, you know, given him tenure, but I would really give him a C to this point in the season, even though he shot relatively well, or at least he did Saturday. There's probably some recency bias there. The fact is Eric Gordon has been nowhere near as dialed in as he typically is on the point of attack. And of course, if he's not dialed in at the point of attack and he's a 6'3" starting small forward that doesn't really leap for rebounds or anything like that, and then you put that with Alper and Şengün and with all these other young guys. And, you know, say what you will about Jabari's skill set, but he is just 19 years old. He does have some lapses in terms of, you know, rotations and typical rookie things. KPJ and Jalen are both young as well. Yeah, it's a lot to ask of Şengün. It puts him in a tough spot. And that's, you know, to be fair to him, it's the same factors that we talked about earlier with Jalen, you know, not judging him too harshly by the on off, the plus minus type stats because of the configuration of that starting lineup. Well, Eric Gordon, your veteran, not really being that veteran defender that you would like to see in terms of a guy who you can reliably trust to, if not lock up, at least compete against his man. I think some of it would come back to me as a contending environment. I think some of this is just, you know, 33, soon to be 34 year old veteran in a losing locker room. Yeah, it's tough to get up for every game when the team is 5-14, and it was 3-14 until these last couple of wins. But yeah, I think that plays into it as well. Like, it just doesn't, you know, Alper and Şengün has his limitations, but when you surround him with three young kids and then an Eric Gordon that, you know, is still a shooter, but not the defender that he can be when he's at his best, then yeah, it's not exactly, you know, you're sort of playing to Alper's flaws, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. I completely agree with that. Also, HR is going to want to see you for trying to evaluate a professor that has tenure. So you're going to have to go to the office later on for that. And because of that, right, because of some of the issues that stem elsewhere in the Rockets defensive scheme, I don't want to harp too much on that for Alpi. So I think relative to expectations from what I kind of expected coming into the season for Alpi, I'm actually going to give him a B+. I've been really impressed with what he's been able to do and what he's been able to accomplish offensively. And I think last game against the OKC Thunder was the most comfortable everybody else looked on the floor with Alper and Şengün, where he was still getting to his spots, getting his post-ups, but also playing well and within the flow of the offense with the other guys out there on the floor as well. And if that can be the trend moving forward, then there's absolutely no reason why Alpi shouldn't continue to start games, and you figure out the Bruno Fernando situation somewhere else, right? Get in the spot minutes, whatever you need to do to have the lob threat for 10 minutes a night. But Alpi is very clearly the best five on this team. There's an argument that, you know, he has the defensive limitations, sure, but it's kind of, I don't know, amplified or compounded by the fact that the rest of the team isn't a great defensive team to begin with. So for Alpi, I'll give him a B+. You gave him B-. He averages out to a B right there. Coming up, we're going to get to the bench brigade, the goon squad, if you will, the group project of the graded scores here at Locked On Rockets. We're going to get there, but first, today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Next game, I'm taking Jalen Green to score more than 26.5 points. How about Alper and Şengün to have more than 7.5 rebounds? Why don't we do Kevin Porter Jr. over on 6.5 assists? And then Jabari Smith Jr., we'll take the under on 5.5 3-pointers. That seems a little bit much. So what is Prize Picks, right? How does it work? You pick 2 to 6 players, and if they score more or less than their Prize Picks projections, you can win up to 25 times back your money on any entry that you submit. No competing against other people. It's just you versus the projections available. Prize Picks offers projections on any sport that you watch. That's NBA, NFL, NHL, PGA, you name it, they've got it over at Prize Picks. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that simple. Download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code Locked On. If you deposit $100, PrizePicks will give you $100. If you deposit $50, PrizePicks will give you $50. Don't forget to enter promo code Locked On at sign up for an instant deposit match up to $100. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Now, we are going to talk about the Goon Squad here in just a second, but I will say that Jayshon Tate and Bruno Fernando are receiving incompletes on their quarter season grades because they just have not played enough for us to be able to evaluate them. And then we're also going to actually apply that same logic to Josh Christopher and Garrison Matthews. Maybe we could evaluate Josh Christopher and Garrison Matthews. And if we did, the grades would probably not reflect too kindly upon their contributions so far, seeing as how it's like Gary Bird just decided to start showing up to classes, you know, 3 weeks into the semester with his contributions over these last couple games without giving too much, by way of production in the early part of the season and the minutes that he did get, but really inconsistent minutes for those guys. So we're not going to evaluate them. We're going to focus on the 4 bench guys that have actually gotten some run here. Let's start with KJ Martin as member number one. Of the Goon Squad, who's had moments where he's come off the bench and been a part of the group project, and then he's had moments where he started this season. So, Ben, what are you giving KJ to start with?
Yeah, I'm giving him an A. To me, it's pretty simple. He's performed well in so many different roles. He's primarily come off the bench, but he has started 5 games, especially with Eric Gordon unavailable for part of all back-to-backs. Relative to realistic expectations, again, KJ's not a star, but again, the 3-point shot is still competent. He's growing by leaps and bounds as a rebounder. We saw that with the 15 he had, the career high, and the win over Atlanta the other night. Really, he's taking on a number of different roles. He's defending. I don't want to say he's a stopper by any means, but is he capable? Yes, absolutely. When you put him at
he's
the
a
three,
much improved man-to-man defender for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, on the perimeter, which is big because again, his first 2 years he was used as 4 to 5. So he's defending better. His rebounding is, you know, and that's something that to me, if you put him at the three, and I know you've talked about this already in terms of, you know, the case for starting KJ Martin over Eric Gordon, you can have a really strong rebounding front court between KJ and Jabari. And that's something that's becoming, you know, an identity of this team, especially the past week, this upturn in rebounding, and they're just dominating teams on the glass. And so I think KJ allows you to play to that even more. Not going to say he's a sniper like Eric Gordon, but I do think that again, you combine the natural athleticism, the finishing, he's getting stronger every year. So it feels like, you know, he's able to sort of contort his body and create space around the basket in ways that maybe he couldn't the last couple of years. Yeah, I'm giving him an A. I just don't know what more you could realistically ask for him in this role. He's flourishing in it.
Yeah, I would take it one step further. And I think KJ is actually going to be my only A plus that I give out throughout this entire gradings process. So that kind of spoils the remainder of the grades for me. Not that Dacian Nix was going to suddenly show up and get an A plus in my book, but I'm giving him an A plus, right? He fills his role. He has this niche role in the team. He does what he does so well. And when he's asked to start, he produces, had the career high 15 rebounds the other night. He does what he does and does it so well. And he meshes with the other guys on this team. He's grown as a shooter. He's grown as a defender. He's grown as somebody who can attack off closeouts and finish strong at the rim. All of it, right? He should be, and probably should have been for a while now, the starting small forward of this team. It's only a matter of time before the professor with tenure gets sacked and KJ Martin gets promoted to the new adjunct professor of the small forward department. So with that, yeah, I'm A plus from me, A from you. I think we're on the same page. KJ's been fantastic. Let's go Tari Eason. Let's go Tari next. You take it away with Tari.
Yeah. The sample is still relatively small considering he's coming off the bench, but I'm going to go A minus simply because, look, we know what he can do defensively. His motor has an absolute impact on games. There's a reason why the Goon Squad continues to have some of the best, you know, on-off ratings. And again, some of that's inflated because, as we talked about earlier, the starting lineup is sort of artificially soft defensively given some of the the choices in terms of starting Eric Gordon, Jabari being as young as he is, and the combination of, you know, Shingun's defensive deficiencies with those other young guys. So I think, you know, you bring in those three high motor guys off the bench, you're always going to see some bounce. And so I think the combination of Eason, KJ, and Garuba plays to each of their strengths. But yeah, in the case of Tari, you know, does he need to finish better at the basket? Yes. And his mom will tell you that. So, you know, I'm not going to try and deny that by any stretch of the imagination. But look, the big thing for him is he going to be viable enough as a 3-point shooter? And to this point, he's making 38% of them. That's if it continues. I know it's a small sample, but again, we're at the quarter point. If Tari Eason can shoot anywhere near 38% from three, then he gives you enough in terms of his defense, his transition play, his motor, that he's going to be viable. So to me, you know, shooting was the big question. And at this point in year one, I don't think you can ask for much more reasonably. So I'll go A-, and it would be an A if he finished a bit better.
Yeah, I'm very similar, although again, kind of like one tier away, but a little bit further south than you. I'm going to go B+ because of the finishing, right? Because he, you know, for all the reasons you laid out, right? The shooting, the intangibles that he provides, he's leading all rookies in like total rebounds. He's leading in deflections. He's leading in steals. Like he's not leading in rebounds, top five in rebounds, somewhere near the top. I got those stats mixed up, but he's impacting the game in so many different ways, especially on the defensive end. And the shooting is better than we projected it would be at this point, this early in his career. So all those things are fantastic. The issue is he needs to finish at the rim. Like somebody said the other day that Tari Eason would be rookie of the year if he just learned how to make layups. And it's not wrong because there's so many moments where he just, it's like the old Corey Brewer thing, right? Where it's like, sorry, coach, I got to the rim and just ran out of talent. And so I do think that that's something that needs to be cleaned up. It's, you know, but when a guy like that, he plays with such a high motor, I think that's definitely something that plays into it, right? He's going 115 miles an hour towards the rim sometimes and just doesn't quite have the touch, right, where it needs to be to finish some of those lay-ins. So he's going to get there. He's going to clean up that part of the game. I'm not worried about that whatsoever. But I do have to take that into account when factoring into the grade. So I will give him a B+, but he has absolutely impressed. I mean, there was a stretch of the season where you could safely argue that he'd been more impressive than Jabari had been for probably the first like 3 weeks or so of the season. And then Jabari started to finally pick it back up. But last member of the group project here, big friend of the show, Roosh Williams, his arguably favorite player on the Houston Rockets.
Yeah.
Usman Garuba, the Spaniard that lets him hang like a lanyard. Did my best Roosh impersonation there. I'm going to go same grade for Garuba as Tari Eason. I'm going to give him a B+. Okay. His impact has been significant off the bench, and it started small, right? Because they were balancing between Bruno and Al P, and it was very clear. It's like, okay, those are the centers 1A, 1B, and then Garuba was the guy who was going to get some DNPs, some spot minutes, whatever. And then the Bruno injury actually wound up being like a blessing in disguise for Garuba, because then Steven Silas was kind of forced to play him, and then you got the chance to see what we all saw in Eurobasket summer, you know, over the summer, all that. His impact can be huge, right? He can go out there and he plays great defense. He's switchable. His passing is the best, maybe even a more exciting part of his game than the defense, because right, for years we talked about Jae'Sean Tate is Draymond Green light, and he's like the Draymond Green successor, and it's like, I think that's actually more Usman Garuba's wheelhouse, right? When you look at his size, his defensive versatility, and then the passing, like out of the short roll, the playmaking, all of that, I got to give him a B+.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go A-. To me, for a guy who was not even in the rotation to start the year, for him to earn enough trust to actually close out games, including that one in Dallas where, you know, they really needed a win at that point. They've now won 3 of 5 starting with that game. And for him to earn trust that quickly. Now, I know, you know, you could make the same argument I did earlier with Shingun, you know, some of the context clues, and say, well, Ben, why didn't Usman, you know, make enough of an impression in training camp to be in the rotation entering the season, where he was clearly behind both Bruno and Shingun? And what I would say with that is that it's more understandable with Garuba, because he simply was not in the rotation period a year ago. He didn't get to play. He wasn't in ideal shape. So, whereas I think Shingun was clearly given a big role going into training camp and clearly did not meet their internal expectations, you know, and again, that's just sort of piecing together the clues, because we don't exactly get to see practices. with Garuba, I think he was always going to have to earn it the hard way in terms of nothing's given to him. Shingun and even Bruno, just based on what they showed a year ago, were going to be a bit ahead in the pecking order. And for Garuba to make this much of an impression this quickly, and I know it's a small sample, but he has shown touch from three-point range, which is absolutely huge if that can hold, just because if he can really draw defenders out to where they at least have to think twice about his ability to shoot, that unlocks even more possibilities for him as a passer, which, as you said, is where he really flourishes. So again, for a guy who was not in the rotation to show enough defensively with his facilitating an offense to, you know, earn trust to actually finish games, to me, that's a really, really promising sign. We'll see what happens in terms of, you know, now that we're probably on Monday going to have both Bruno and Shingun in the rotation for the first time. Does he still get to play? I mean, he should, but that's up to Steven Silas to figure out. In terms of what Garuba can show relative to expectations year two, a guy who didn't even play in year one, to me, you know, he's not a perfect player. He definitely needs to continue to get more athletic, to sort of build his body up to where he has hopefully a bit more explosion, to where he can finish. Nothing's ever going to be like a true lob threat, but at least more natural in terms of his finishing ability around the rim. But relative to expectations going into training camp, yeah, I'm giving him an A-. He's been really good.
Yeah, that's actually, it brings up one more point about Garuba just to chime in here, and it's not going to change my grade for him, but just his hands around the rim have been a little disappointing. Like he bobbles a lot of passes that are, you know, on the money, give or take, maybe, you know, slightly, you know, harder to catch, but just if the slider on his hands could just go up to, like, you know, 10 extra points, it'd be fantastic. So, and then the shooting, right? We don't know if it's going to, you know, sustain across the entirety of a season. We'll see. He's not going to be, you know, a 70-80% three-point shooter forever, but while it's lasting, you know, the ability to space out the defense a little bit, that's something that, you know, Steven Silas could utilize to his advantage and maybe even play him before a little bit. But
yeah, and the one thing that I would add on his catching ability near the rim, I'm right there with you, but that's something that to me is a fairly correctable flaw. That's something, you know, not that he's ever going to have great hands, but in terms of just getting a guy to where he's just functional. And I think we've already seen some growth from, say, his first few games in the rotation to the last few. I don't think there have been as many lapses. To me, there's got to be some nerves there that contribute to that in the early going. You don't get to this level, and it's not like we saw it that much when he played for Spain in Eurobasket. I think that's one of those more correctable weaknesses. Not that it's going to become a strength, but as long as it's not a liability, then, you know, it's enough to where the rest of his game can make him a positive factor.
Definitely, definitely. Last guy that we've got here, Dacian Nix, who coming into the season, you know, I had him painted as, yeah, he's going to be the backup point guard. He's the only true point guard on the roster. When you look at, you know, maybe Ty Washington is a bit more of a combo guard style player. KPJ, maybe not a traditional point guard, right? You know, they needed a guard and the backup spot, you know, backup spot minutes. And Josh Christopher, just, he's not a point guard. He's a, you know, combo guard, combo wing, if you will, because that's what I've been calling him all season long. I feel like Dacian, I'm torn on this, and I've like, so whoever, I don't know who it was. Somebody said that I need a nickname Dacian Nix Bitcoin, because I made the joke that, like, on the Wall Street's Bet, like, subreddit, where it's like the Bitcoin, like, roller coaster meme, where it's like, woo, like, going up and then it's going down. Like, that's the Dacian Nix experience. It's just like, you know, a couple great plays in a row and then a couple really bad plays in a row. So screw it. I guess we're gonna nickname Dacian Nix Bitcoin, at least on this podcast. But for Bitcoin's grade, I'm going to give him a C. I'm going to give him a flat C. I feel like that's a fair grade. I think he struggled really bad early on and then kind of got back into that rhythm where it's like, okay, he's good. He's got the consistent minutes. He's had some flashes. He's had some good playmaking. He has the inconsistencies in his game that he's still ironing out, but he's still a kid, just like everybody else on this roster. Yeah. He's trying to make it work. He's trying to understand. I think for what he's asked to do in the second unit, he does it well enough, at least to the degree of a C. So I will give him that.
I'm going to go C-, just because, to me, some of the turnovers are really baffling. And when you look at his profile, the one thing that keeps him passable is the fact that, I know it's a small sample, but he's shooting over 39% on threes, which for a point guard is pretty good. I mean, that's something that can keep you theoretically viable. But from two-point range, and this absolutely matches the eye test going back to summer league, he's shooting below 19% inside the arc, which is just dreadful. He does not finish well on his drives. He does not create any rim pressure at all. And when you're that style of point guard, you need to be really crisp in your decision making to offset an inability to really create your own offense, or, you know, really just be even like a drive and kick factor, because it's hard to get drive and kicks when other teams aren't worried about you being able to finish yourself. It's really hard to collapse the defense that way. And you just need to be really crisp in your decision making. And some of the turnovers are just absolutely baffling. Again, that's part of why I gave, you know, Kevin Porter Jr. a better grade than I think some people might, because, you know, you do have what's supposed to be more of a, you know, an old school throwback point guard in Dacian Nix coming in off the bench. And yet it's not as if the offense looks dramatically different when Dacian is running the show instead of KPJ. You're still having a lot of the same issues. And of course that can point to, you know, the supporting cast as well. This is not a perfect roster. And so, you know, let's be fair to a 20-year-old Dacian Nix in year two. You know, some of this may be out of his control a bit. It's not like he's going out there with the Golden State Warriors. But at the same time, for me, I just struggle to see the profile for him. You know, the three-point shooting is enough to where it's like, eh, you know, that's decent. And he has a pass from time to time where you'll say, hey, that was a really good read. But again, for me, the combination of just some of the more baffling turnovers, just lazy plays. He's not a guy that really seems to hustle a lot either. And so you combine that with a guy who really, really struggles as just an attacker, again, below 20% shooting inside the arc, does not seem to have the burst or the touch to finish. It's just tough for me at this point. I could be wrong, but to me, it just feels like it's, you know, if not when it comes to Ty Washington eventually becoming that backup point guard, because he just clearly has a much better overall profile. And so, you know, Dacian has made enough threes and makes the occasional pass now and then to, you know, not give him a D or an F, but I wouldn't say I'm impressed either.
Yeah. And maybe my part of where I'm coming from with the C is just because when Dacian is out there, especially in the minutes where Jalen and KPJ have been staggered, he basically just gets the ball up the court and then gets out of the way for Jalen to do his thing. Maybe that's where I'm giving some extra brownie points for Dacian Nix. Just, hey, just get out there and let Jalen cook, right? That's your job. Right. So that maybe that's where some of the you know, softness on the grade comes from. But you mentioned his name there a moment ago, right? The guy who may supplant Dacian Nix at some point this season. Ty Washington, if you've made it this far in the grading scale, you've got one more little Easter egg. Ty is the kid that got sent away to boarding school. He's currently on assignment with the G League Vipers, and who knows when he's going to return to the Rockets lineup, but until he does, we cannot evaluate him. We will revisit this discussion at some point, probably around the mid-season mark, and take a look at some mid-season grades once we get around the 40-ish game mark or so. That'll be a ton of fun to kind of revisit our grades from this episode and kind of see how things have fluctuated up to that point. But I mentioned it at the top of the episode. You can play along with us. I will paste the format on the YouTube comments page. You can give us your grades for each player on the Rockets roster. Do that in the YouTube comments. It'll be a ton of fun. I'll read through all those, and you guys can tell us whether we were completely off base on some of these grades or on the money, whatever. But Ben, you know the drill. Let everybody know where to track you down at.
Yep. Ben Jabot's on Twitter, the RocketsWire on Twitter, the Loggerline on Twitter, and of course, RocketsWire.USAtoday.com for all of my written coverage.
That's going to do it for another edition of Locked on Rockets. As always, appreciate you so much for checking out the show. If you haven't done so yet, consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcast. That's Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, free and available on all podcast platforms, including YouTube, where you can help the show out a lot by going to YouTube, searching Locked on Rockets, liking, subscribing, and commenting. Helps out a ton. Go fill out the Houston Rockets quarter season report card. Do it in the YouTube comments. I'm going to paste the template there. You can just copy it, drop it into a comment, and then plug in the grades for each player as you see fit. I will read each and every one of those. But as always, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked on Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.